So you've given me the impression then, by the time you moved up to your new site, store site, in 1937, that you had pretty well managed to pay off your wholesalers. How had you managed to do this? Had the Depression got any better?
No, the Depression hadn't got any better, but we just decided that we didn't like being in debt, and we kept our nose to the grindstone. We went no place. The only luxury we had was a car, which was a necessity because we had to use it for delivery. Right. Delivery was free, and so as I say, we bought nothing for the house. We did what we with what we had, and if you pay anybody so much a month, as I had often suggested to other debtors, that if they come along and give me 25 cents a week or 50 cents a week, eventually they pay it off. If I got 10 or 15 people doing that at the same time, I would have a little more money each month to play around with. And I put that money into groceries, but they didn't see it that way. But the other people were very glad to accept anything they could get, and they took it, and it was paid off by the time we moved up here. To the best of my knowledge, we didn't owe anything. We didn't have anything left, but we didn't owe anything, which is something.
So, by the time you moved to the new location, were there other people in the area that were starting to be in competition with you? Other grocers?
Oh, yes, one across the street, across in the old place, Goodrich.
This would be Goodrich.
Yeah.
He set up on that corner while you were still on Hastings and Spurling.
Mr. Cop, he down at the CIO.
Yes.
Flat.
F.T. Cop.
He owned that piece of property. And so he told us he was going to build a store. So we built the store and Goodrich took it over. Of course, that naturally hurt to some extent. Then, of course, Mr. Gower built further along down the street on Spurling and Hastings. That was the first...
Mr. Goward is on Spurling and Kitchener.
Spurling and Kitchener, yeah, that's right. That was, and then of course all through the Depression, at Capitol Hill, there were 1, 2, 3 grocery stores. So, I mean, anybody who didn't have a car and was walking, well, they go in there. I mean, those people got a lot of business from us, particularly the people who say you lived on Pell Avenue or lived on Hastings Street and didn't want to go to the post office. Have you been? Pick it up and go on home. Well, you get to Grove Street, didn't have to come to the store, just keep on going. So that actually speaking, the competition took as much away from those people, Goodrich's and them, as it took away from us.
Right.
We didn't, of course, also the population had been growing all this time, growing and growing and growing, you see.
Right. So you managed to build the new combination house and store at 599 Spurling.
Yeah, that's right.
And you moved in there in 1937. You basically built it on a shoestring, building when you could.
Oh, yes, we built it. We got a mortgage. There's nothing to be ashamed of. We got a mortgage. And at the time, which was gradually paid off.
And
the people anybody we hired, we made a deal with them. We paid them some cash. The other was going to have to be in groceries. Which, of course, after all, what difference they got to have to eat.
Right.
So this is how we got by. I'll tell you a good story, if there's any good here, was when we were building this place. Come along to look at it one day, and there was a little notice pinned on one of our chimneys, condemned. So I phoned the inspector and said, what's this condemned for? He told me it wasn't tile lined. There's a new bylaw coming. It had to be tile-lined except in a one-story residence. Well, I said, it's a one-story residence. He said, it isn't the store. Well, I said, the chimney's not in the store. And he was still arguing. He said, oh, very well. I said, we want to argue with you, but I said, I haven't got the money to tear it down. So I said, tomorrow morning, I said, there's half a dozen men I've been taking off the relief rolls can go back on relief rolls. Okay. And he came down the next morning and told me, as long as I plastered it outside, he'd let it go.
Yes.
And incidentally, it's still going strong yet.
The old store that you vacated then, very shortly a fellow by the name of Morgan took that over.
Yeah, that's right. He took it over.
Another competitor then.
Well, by that time, I was 38, wasn't it?
Right.
Yeah, well, it was a competitor to some extent, but not to a great extent. And then, of course, in 39, when the war started, and incidentally, at that particular time, I personally was working in a sawmill. And my wife was looking after it by herself. And when the war came on and rationing came in, it was impossible by that time to look after both of us, but it got so big. One person couldn't do it alone. And look after people with ration books, tear off ration books. By the time you do that, you'd have seven or eight people mumbling to themselves about the post office. So we gradually went out of anything with ration, we went out of.
I see.
Because, as I said, we were getting, with me, with myself working, and with her, with the post office, well, we were...
So gradually your store just became the post office?
Well, yes, except for tobacco, candy, and magazines, frankly speaking, on ice cream, that's all.
Right. There's a couple of other people listed in the area. An A.W. Fiddler is listed as a grocer.
Curtis
and Sperling.
Yeah, that's right. He started one there, but he wasn't very big.
Right.
He didn't do very much anyway.
What the question that comes to mind is, why was it that just towards the end of the Depression, all these other people could come into a business which seemed to be relatively unprofitable?
I think myself, Goward, had been asked by a lot of people living down that Kitchener Street way. It was a long walk, particularly in wintertime.
Mm-hmm.
There was no transportation whatsoever. If you didn't have a car, in the wintertime, it was a long drag to come all the way up here, pouring rain, pouring back in. And I think originally that's how it came about. And he no doubt, he did take away a lot of the people from down that end, you know. And then, of course, he was working, you see. He was working at Nichols Chemical Works
on the Barnett
Highway. And until he had an industrial accident, from which he died. But then, of course, he had two sons who could help in the store. They were in the teenagers then, you see. So this is, I think, why Carl started. What the other fellow started for, I don't know. I think the same thing. They all thought that having a grocery store was a good way to get the groceries cheap, probably.
At the end of the Depression era, approximately how many people owed you money, and could you give any sort of approximation of the amount of money?
Oh, the amount of money was about $2,500, $3,000. Doesn't sound like very much, but it was a hell of a lot of money.
No, in context, it's
a lot of money. 25, 30 people.
Right. Families.
The biggest, well, probably more than that, because the biggest was $140.08, I remember quite well, which, of course, we've never collected a nickel. And from then it went down.
Right.
Then they say, why did you let a man with a grocery store get up to $140.08? Well, he had a contract. Cutting wood for the contract for the hospitals, hospitals and schools in Burnaby. But unfortunately, we didn't know. That was my fault. I should have checked into it. He was cutting up on Burnaby Mountain, but he didn't have a signed written contract. And what he was doing, he was supplying the schools a certain amount of wood each one to keep it, you know, to keep them going.
Mm-hmm.
And when he got about half his contract filled, the fellow whom he was cutting from said, that's all. So he was out of business just like that, and we were left holding the bag with the grocery bill.